36 X-Wix Commander Q.
36 X-Wix Commander Q.
36 X-Wix Commander Q.
30. En spirit, l'envoyer,
threat to our mental health, I think, is probably loss of perspective and nostalgia and the idea that the travails we face today are somehow uniquely threatening. Now, I'm not minimizing what we face, but adaptability and resilience and the willingness to sacrifice and to do good and to elevate and to illuminate don't ever leave us, and they haven't ever left us, and they're not leaving us now.
Friday, September 10th, 1999, 12:35 p.m. Pulling back onto I-80 East. Leaving Council Bluffs, Iowa, which is at exit 3. Getting onto the highway, pretty heavy streets, two different corners, people were standing with signs asking drivers for money, and my immediate reaction was, they're not hustling very well, but I have to question that by wondering if that's not an Eastern attitude, where street hustling is for many people a profession. They don't do it out of necessity per se, but out of choice. I've heard stories of people who've been on the street hustling for 20 or 30 years, and it becomes a way of life. And there's this one guy I always used to see around who, he would demand quarters from people. And every time I saw him, I got madder and madder. Until finally the time where I was walking on a subway platform, and he got in front of me, and, I sort of puffed out my chest a little bit to get him out of the way, and he pretended like I had knocked him down, and he went flying across the platform as though I'd taken a shot at him, which I hadn't.
There's our mall.
Mall of the Bluffs. Passing by, though it's across on the other side of the road. Mall of the Bluffs, where we got a whole mess of shit at Target and a couple other places. That was on the other way. That was when Mio's natural facial expression was not a smile. It was something that came out quite often because she was having a good time for the most part, but it wasn't permanently stuck there. If only she could have a conversation with that girl that she was and say, don't worry. Next time you pass by this sign that says Mall of the Bluffs, life will have changed. As it often does. funny. The first hustler had a sign that said, "Minister needs gas money food." And I thought, okay, this guy is a hustler. But the second sighting was, that's not the right word, but I'll use it. The second instance was a guy who looked to be in his 30s. He looked sort of Hollywoodish. He had the long blonde hair and the sunglasses and the tight blue jeans. But he was with this companion who was this older woman who didn't look in any way. She wasn't exactly decrepit, but she was older and she was not in the best of shape, nor really young. And they stood on a median strip, and then they left. And I watched the way he helped her cross the street, and something about it seemed most definitely not hustler-like. Two of the lessons that we need to be constantly learning is we do not know what's going to happen next at all, period. Right?
I'm sorry?
We do not know what's going to happen next.
We do not know what's going to happen next. It's never going to be what you expect.
Right. And
number two?
We don't even know what's happening now.
What?
We don't even know what's happening now half the time. We don't know everything about what's happening now. We don't know the individuals in these trucks that are passing by. We don't even know the contents of our own heart half the time.
We hope we know the contents, but we don't even know the exact location.
But not all of them.
More and more, as the days go past, more and more items are hopefully still in the car.
Don't know. It's hard to act out of that thought, though. How do you act out of the thought if we don't know? You don't assume anything. And yet to function, you have to assume certain things. For example, Mio is assuming that the other cars around her are going to follow the traffic rules, though she's prepared for the possibility that someone may break form. But for the most part, people are going about the speed limit or under. Cars driving east on this highway are going one way and the other cars are going the other way. We're all driving on the right-hand side of the road to the way we're faced. The sky hasn't fallen and the earth hasn't quaked, at least right now. All seems to be what it is, but isn't. Sometimes it's comforting that things are what they seem to be, and sometimes it's frustrating that things are what they seem to be, and that's also true that things are not what they seem to be. There's always this mysterious glow around things if one pays attention, this aura of mystery, of things undisclosed. Even in these few minutes of talking, we're passing by dozens of houses, and they're not as densely located, they're not as densely near each other as in the east, but what the hell's happening in each of them? Are they empty? Is someone screaming? Someone sitting there watching television? Probably the news, but maybe not. I would maintain in this mystery lies much of hope. That you can stand in front of a tree and not know what it is, even though someone may tell you its name and tell you some of its growing habits and tell you when it sheds its leaves or if it sheds its leaves, and give you a sense of whether it bears fruit and how long it takes to come to maturity, and yet you've learned nothing about that particular tree. And you can stand before a person and feel the same way. Are you going to write postcards while driving?
Yeah.
Mio's driving to Nevada was so admirable. Since returning from Nevada, her habits have eroded, or perhaps one would say they've evolved.
No, see, what you don't understand is that on the way there I was so uptight that I was not able to multitask, but what you don't realize is I multitask while driving all the time.
I see. So this is how she really is, writing postcards at 70 miles an hour. Let's see, she was taking pictures at 70 miles an hour. She's braided her hair at 70 miles an hour.
I didn't braid it, I just put it back in a ponytail.
What else have you done?
What's that?
What else have you done?
Open crackers, eaten any number of assorted items.
Yes. Takes advantage of the fact that she's sitting with someone who's not driving the car. It would be less fun.
How about if you give me a piece of paper and I'll write this out of paper?
Oh, I see.
Or I'll write it on his bag.
Okay.
I can't probably write it neatly. Here, I can write it on this.
The wonderful thing about Mio is most of the time when she makes a request, she's fulfilled herself by the time I've even moved. Oh, you're self-sufficient beyond anybody I've ever known.
Well, isn't it nice that now I don't have to be quite so
self-sufficient. Floating, glowing, happy. I can't come down. I don't want to. That's wonderful. That gets right to the point. Good poetry gets to the point. The things on the little mini dashboard that rest between her steering wheel and her different instruments is gradually growing. Eyeglasses, pen, notes, postcards, change purse. It must be pointed out that this car has only had one time delaying problem throughout almost 4,800 miles. I think it's a matter of pride at this point. About putting this stuff or deriving from this stuff a radio show, I feel much less constricted. Now it's just a matter of having up tapes, which we do. Later on in this tape, I'm going to begin reading the Mio the Wizard of Oz that you've never read. Have you ever read the Wizard of Oz? I've met people who haven't seen the movie.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I've seen it many times.
Okay, good.
And we stopped watching it when they started having the little inserts with every ad of, like, the Hollywood folks telling what their favorite part and all that kind of crap.
Right.
I last saw part of it with you on the Common.
That's right. They showed it on the Boston Common this summer. You were very depressed that night.
Samuel X with Commander Q.
36 Jesuíf e Commander Q.
36 X with Commander Q. 3.
And spirit and all right.
Talk about right conduct toward nature and toward other people and toward yourself. Okay, it's Friday, September 10th, 1999. Riding along I-80 East, Iowa, mile marker 280, somewhere near New Liberty, Iowa. I'm beginning a new storybook.
Too distracting. Yeah, headphones on.
I'm reading. Okay, here we go. Mike. Alrighty. The Wonderful Wizard of Oz by L. Frank Baum, with pictures by W.W. Denslow. Introduction. Folklore, legends, myths, and fairy tales have followed childhood through the ages, for every healthy youngster has a wholesome and instinctive love for stories, fantastic, marvelous, and manifestly unreal. The winged fairies of Grimm and Andersen have brought more happiness to childish hearts than all other human creations. Yet the old-time fairy tale, having served for generations, may be now classed as historical in the children's library. For the time has come for a series of newer wonder tales in which the stereotyped genie, dwarf, and fairy are eliminated, together with all the horrible and blood-curdling incident devised by their authors to point a fearsome moral to each tale. Modern education includes morality. Therefore, the modern child seeks only entertainment in its wonder tales and gladly dispenses with all disagreeable incident. Having this thought in mind, the story of the Wonderful Wizard of Oz was written solely to pleasure children of today. It aspires to be a modernized fairy tale in which the wonderment and joy are retained and the heartaches and nightmares are left out. L. Frank Baum, Chicago, April 1900. It's a picture of the scarecrow looking at the chapters list. This book is dedicated to my good friend and comrade, my wife, LFB. Chapter 1, The Cyclone. There we go. There she is, little cutie. Dorothy lived in the midst of the great Kansas prairies, with Uncle Henry, who was a farmer, and Aunt Em, who was the farmer's wife. Their house was small, for the lumber to build it had to be carried by wagon many miles. There were four walls, a floor and a roof, which made one room, and this room contained a rusty-looking cooking stove, a cupboard for the dishes, a table, three or four chairs, and the beds. Uncle Henry and Aunt Em had a big bed in one corner, and Dorothy had a little bed in another corner. There was no garret at all and no cellar except a small hole dug in the ground called a cyclone cellar, where the family could go in case one of those great whirlwinds arose, mighty enough to crush any building in its path. It was reached by a trap door in the middle of the floor, from which a ladder led down into the small dark hole. When Dorothy stood in the doorway and looked around, she could see nothing but the great gray prairie on every side. Not a tree nor a house broke the broad sweep of flat country that reached the edge of the sky in all directions. The sun had baked the plowed land into a gray mass with little cracks running through it. Even the grass was not green, for the sun had burned the tops of the long blades until they were the same gray color to be seen everywhere. Once the house had been painted, but the sun blistered the paint and the rains washed it away, and now the house was as dull and gray as everything else. When Aunt Em came to live there, she was a young, pretty wife. The sun and wind had changed her, too. They had taken the sparkle from her eyes and left them a sober gray. They had taken the red from her cheeks and lips, and they were gray also. She was thin and gaunt and never smiled now. When Dorothy, who was an orphan, first came to her, Aunt Em had been so startled by the child's laugh that she would scream and press her hand upon her heart whenever Dorothy's merry voice reached her ears, and she still looked at the little girl with wonder that she could find anything to laugh at. Uncle Henry never laughed. He worked hard from morning till night and did not know what joy was. He was gray also, from his long beard to his rough boots, and he looked stern and solemn and rarely spoke. It was Toto that made Dorothy laugh and saved her from growing as gray as her other surroundings. Toto was not gray. He was a little black dog with long silky hair and small black eyes that twinkled merrily on either side of his funny wee nose. Toto played all day long, and Dorothy played with him and loved him dearly. Today, however, they were not playing. Uncle Henry sat upon the doorstep and looked anxiously at the sky, which was even grayer than usual. Dorothy stood in the door with Toto in her arms and looked at the sky, too. Aunt Em was washing the dishes. Okay. Made a little horseshoe above the doorway. There's sunflowers. Flowers. From the far north, they heard a low wail of the wind, and Uncle Henry and Dorothy could see where the long grass bowed in waves before the coming storm. There now came a sharp whistling in the air from the south, and as they turned their eyes that way, they saw ripples in the grass coming from that direction also. Suddenly, Uncle Henry stood up. "There's a cyclone coming, Em," he called to his wife. "I'll go look after the stock." Then he ran toward the sheds where the cows and horses were kept. Aunt Em dropped her work and came to the door. One glance told her of the danger close at hand. "Quick, Dorothy," she screamed, "run for the cellar." Toto jumped out of Dorothy's arms and hid under the bed, and the girl started to get him. Aunt Em, badly frightened, threw open the trap door in the floor and climbed down the ladder into the small dark hole. Dorothy caught Toto at last and started to follow her aunt. When she was halfway across the room, there came a great shriek from the wind, and the house shook so hard that she lost her footing and sat down suddenly upon the floor. A strange thing then happened. The house whirled around two or three times and rose slowly through the air. Dorothy felt as if she were going up in a balloon. The north and south winds met where the house stood and made it the exact center of the cyclone. In the middle of a cyclone, the air is generally still, but the great pressure of the wind on every side of the house raised it up higher and higher, until it was at the very top of the cyclone, and there it remained and was carried miles and miles away as easily as you could carry a feather. It was very dark, and the wind howled horribly around her, but Dorothy found she was riding quite easily. After the first few whirls around, and one other time when the house tipped badly, she felt as if she was being rocked gently, like a baby in a cradle. Toto did not like it. He ran about the room, now here, now there, barking loudly, but Dorothy sat quite still on the floor and waited to see what would happen. Once Toto got too near, the open trap door and fell in. And at first the little girl thought she had lost him. But soon she saw one of his ears sticking up through the hole, for the strong pressure of the air was keeping him up so that he could not fall. She crept to the hole, caught Toto by the ear, and dragged him into the room again, afterward closing the trap door so that no more accidents could happen. Hour after hour passed away, and slowly Dorothy got over her fright. But she felt quite lonely, and the wind shrieked so loudly all around her that she nearly became deaf. At first she had wondered if she would be dashed to pieces when the house fell again, but as the hours passed and nothing terrible happened, she stopped worrying and resolved to wait calmly and see what the future would bring. At last she crawled over the swaying floor to her bed and lay down upon it, and Toto followed and lay down beside her. In spite of the swaying of the house and the wailing of the wind, Dorothy soon closed her eyes and fell fast asleep. There's Dorothy, fast asleep with Toto. What's funny is, yes?
Yeah, the trust issues.
Sure. What's funny is that there's no illustration missing. There's a beautiful illustration of the open trap door, and Toto is halfway in it, and she's got him by his ear, pulling him in. It's really neat.
Isn't that in there, though?
What?
That illustration?
Nope. You're gypped.
What's that?
You're gypped. You're totally...
What a ripoff.
What a ripoff.
But it's probably in my other book.
Oh, it's totally in your other book.
Maybe I didn't put it in there.
Those are pretty long.
Yeah.
They're hard to mistake. 7:24 p.m. Stupid mic button was set wrong, but I'm going to resume reading from where I just left off a couple of minutes ago. So, continuing reading The Wizard of Oz. Let's see. It was... The Mist, Chapter 2.
Very annoying.
Yes. In the old days, that would have driven me crazy, and I would have had to read it all over again, but that's okay.
Oh,
that's
we're at 5,086.
Wow. And we're going for 6,300? We still have...
I'm not going to make it. We have 1,300 miles to go. I think we're going to do 300 more tonight. That means 1,000 for Saturday. It's a lot of miles.
We've
got to go further tonight.
Yeah?
We've got to go further tonight.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you tell me when you want me to drive and spell you. Alright. Okay, so let's see. So Dorothy's walking through the Munchkin country, and all the Munchkins are bowing to her because everyone knew she had been the means of destroying the Wicked Witch and setting them free from bondage. See, if that button broke off too, it would be a loss to me. Okay. The houses... Oh, there's that Munchkin house. The houses of the Munchkins were odd-looking dwellings, for each was round with a big dome for a roof. All were painted blue, for in this country of the East, blue is the favorite color. Toward evening, when Dorothy was tired with her long walk and began to wonder where she should pass the night, she came to a house rather larger than the rest of them. On the green lawn before it, many men and women were dancing. Five little fiddlers played as loud as possible, and the people were laughing and singing, while a big table nearby was loaded with delicious fruits and nuts, pies and cakes, and many other good things to eat. The people greeted Dorothy kindly and invited her to supper and to pass the night with them, for this was the home of the richest Munchkin, one of the richest Munchkins in the land.
and his friends were gathered with him to celebrate their freedom from the bondage of the wicked witch. Dorothy ate a hearty supper and was waited upon by the rich munchkin himself, whose name was Bok, B-O-Q. I can't tell you, parenthetically speaking here, how important this sentence was to me when I was in fourth grade. For I had learned, did I tell you the story? For I had been taught in school that in the English language, and I probably didn't know there was any other at that point, in the English language, every single word, the rule is, when there's a Q in a word in English, it's always followed by a U. Well, I had read The Wizard of Oz, and I remember distinctly going to the library because I told my teacher that that's not always true. And I searched for this word. This guy's name is Bok, B-O-Q, no U. I was exultant. I'm still exultant. Like, you're wrong.
That's just what my brother did with his science teacher in about fifth grade. Kind of let it trouble because he told her she was wrong. She was wrong. She didn't want to admit it.
And now that I think about it, that computer company, Compaq, C-O-M-P-A-Q, right?
Right. But, of course, if she wanted to weasel out of it, she would tell you, well, from the names are exempted.
That's true. I mean, that's a good point. But they don't tell you that.
Right. They think it's complicated to tell the children the exceptions at the same time as to tell the rules. But in the end, it's more complicated.
Listen, inevitably, the smartasses are going to find Compaq and Bok, and my brother's going to find his exception. That'll be that. If you explain that there are rules and then there are exceptions, because things are not always what they appear to be, it's a good thing to explain it to a kid. I mean, why does he have to find out later? Why can't you just, like, get it done now? Look.
Right. Well, why do they assume that a child won't be able to understand the rule if it's not absolute?
Right.
Kids are used to exceptions. Everything in their lives is about exceptions.
Right, right.
You always go to bed at 8, except when your grandmother's here.
Right. Uh-huh. You are totally the little girl being lured into the car by the lollipop. Okay. Bogged down and exulted over the name Bok. Okay, so Dorothy sat down upon a settee, or seti, and watched the people dance. When Bok saw her silver shoes, he said, "You must be a great sorceress." "Why?" asked the girl. "Because you wear silver shoes and have killed the wicked witch. Besides, you have white in your frock, and only witches and sorceresses wear white." "My dress is blue and white checked," said Dorothy, smoothing out the wrinkles in it. "It is kind of you to wear that," said Bok. "Blue is the color of the munchkins and white is the witch color, so we know you are a friendly witch." Dorothy did not know what to say to this, for all the people seemed to think her a witch, and she knew very well she was only an ordinary little girl who had come by the chance of a cyclone into a strange land. When she had tired watching the dancing, Bok led her into the house, where he gave her a room with a pretty bed in it. The sheets were made of blue cloth, and Dorothy slept soundly in them till morning, with Toto curled up on the blue rug beside her. And now you get a color illustration of it. Okay. One on the left-hand side, with Dorothy in a seat, all the munchkins bowing to her.
Very cute.
The sun smiling down on her. Okay. She ate a hearty breakfast and watched a wee munchkin baby. There's wee, not so wee, at the king huge. I'll never forget that one.
What was it from?
I don't know. Which is, it just became one of those, what do you call, art right. studio jokes.
Right.
Wee, not so wee, at fucking huge. She watched a baby, a wee munchkin baby, who played with Toto and pulled his tail and crowed and laughed in a way that greatly amused Dorothy.
Ah. Woo!
Toto was a fine curiosity to all the people, for they had never seen a dog before. How far is it to the Emerald City? The girl asked. I do not know, answered Bok gravely, for I've never been there. It is better for people to keep away from Oz, unless they have business with him. But, oh, here's a picture of child and baby.
Yes.
But it is a long way to the Emerald City, and it will take you many days. The country here is rich and pleasant, but you must pass through rough and dangerous places before you reach the end of your journey. This worried Dorothy a little, but she knew that only the Great Oz could help her get back to Kansas again, so she bravely resolved not to turn back. She bade her friends goodbye and again started along the road of yellow brick. When she had gone several miles, did I tell you the name of this chapter? How Dorothy saved the Scarecrow. When she had gone several miles, she thought she would stop to rest, and so climbed to the top of the fence beside the road and sat down. There was a great cornfield.
yes, there was for the last several days.
Beyond the fence, and not far away, she saw a scarecrow placed high on a pole to keep birds away from the ripe corn. Dorothy leaned her chin upon her hand. Oh, this is particularly cute. Where's the Dorothy leaning her chin upon her hand? Oh, here she is. Look at this one. Just a moment. Laid her chin upon her hand and gazed thoughtfully at the scarecrow. Its head was a small sack stuffed with straw, with eyes, nose, and mouth painted on it to represent a face. An old pointed blue hat that had belonged to some munchkin was perched on this head, and the rest of the figure was a suit of blue clothes, worn and faded, which had also been stuffed with straw. On the feet were some old boots with blue tops, such as every munchkin man wore in this country, and the figure was raised above the stalks of corn by means of the pole stuck up its back. While Dorothy was looking earnestly into the queer painted face of the scarecrow, she was surprised to see that one of the eyes slowly winked at her. She thought she must have been mistaken at first, for none of the scarecrows in Kansas ever wink, but presently the figure nodded its head to her in a friendly way. Then she climbed down from the fence and walked up to it while Toto ran around the pole and barked. Good day, said the scarecrow in a rather husky voice. Did you speak? Asked the girl in wonder. Certainly, answered the scarecrow. How do you do? I'm pretty well, thank you, replied Dorothy politely. How do you do? I'm not feeling very well, said the scarecrow with a smile, for it is very tedious being perched up here night and day to scare away crows. Can't you get down? Asked Dorothy. No, for this... There is a pole stuck up my back. If you will please take away the pole, I shall be greatly obliged to you. Dorothy reached up both arms and lifted the figure off the pole, but being stuffed with straw, it was quite light. Thank you very much, said the scarecrow when he had been set down on the ground. I feel like a new man. Dorothy was puzzled at this, for it sounded queer to hear a stuffed man speak and to see him bow and walk along beside her. Another picture. Let's see. Who are you? Asked the scarecrow when he had stretched himself and yawned. And where are you going? My name is Dorothy, said the girl. And I am going to the Emerald City to ask the Great Oz to send me back to Kansas. Great eyes of sunny back again. "Where's the Emerald City?" he inquired, "and who is Oz?" "Why, don't you know?" she asked in surprise. "No, indeed, I don't know anything. You see, I am stuffed, so I have no brains at all," he answered sadly. "Oh," said Dorothy, "I'm awfully sorry for you. Do you think," he asked, "if I go to the Emerald City with you, the Great Oz would give me some brains?" "I cannot tell," she returned, "but you may come with me if you like. If Oz will not give you any brains, you will be no worse off than you are now." "That is true," said the Scarecrow. "You see," he continued confidentially, "I don't mind my legs and arms and body being stuffed, because I cannot get hurt. If anyone treads on my toes or sticks a pin into me, it doesn't matter, for I don't feel it. But I do not want people to call me a fool, and if my head stays stuffed with straw instead of with brains, as yours is, how am I ever to know anything?" "I understand how you feel," said the little girl, who was truly sorry for him. "If you will come with me, I'll ask Oz to do all he can for you." "Thank you," he answered gratefully. They walked back to the road. Dorothy helped him over the fence, and they started along the path of yellow brick for the Emerald City. Toto did not like this addition to the party at first. He smelled around the stuffed man as if he suspected there might be a nest of rats in the straw, and he often growled in an unfriendly way at the Scarecrow. "Don't mind Toto," said Dorothy to her new friend. "He never bites." "I'm not afraid," replied the Scarecrow. "He can't hurt straw. Do let me carry the basket for you. I shall not mind, for I can't get tired. I'll tell you a secret," he continued as he walked along. "There is only one thing in the world I am afraid of." "What is that?" asked Dorothy. "The Munchkin farmer who made you?" "No," answered the Scarecrow. "It's a lighted match." That's the end of chapter 3.
I'm having a nap attack.
Nap?
Yeah.
You need to be relieved?
I think maybe.
Okay. I'm sorry. Look safely back in this place. I'll be glad to. Now we need to find a place to switch over.
Yes.
End of reading for now. More later.
X with Commander Q.
36 Shizu Ify Commander K.
36 X with Commander Q. Train.
And spirit and all right.
My foolish notion. the way it goes.
That's
the
way.
I won't tease you, nor tell you no lies. Don't make no babble, just look in my eyes. Waited so long, baby, now that we're friends. And man's got his patience, and here's where mine ends. I want you, sis.
But he talks about monogamy. September 11th, 1999, 3:04 a.m. Eastern Time. Driving along I-80 East in Indiana near exit 101. But, Orion's visible in the sky. Near Bristol and Goshen, Indiana. Mile marker 100. We've been driving all night and we have 63 more miles to go to get 10 miles over the border into Ohio. We'll drive over 600 miles today. But good spirits, music. whenever I go pinball machines. So far, right now, at this point, going well. Later.
Four 21 in the morning. About 12 miles over across the Ohio line into Ohio. In front of a Kano Lodge. Mio is checking us in right now. Tired as tired can possibly be. Drove over 600 fucking miles today. I'm amazed we made it this far. It's just fucking freakish. Fucking, this much driving is fucking freakish. But sleep soon. So. Cannot think of anything coherent or helpful to say. But I just want to report the basic facts. More later tomorrow after sleep. Bye.
Real.
Ah, okay. Saturday, September 11th, 1999, 6:48 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, finally. Recently across the border into Pennsylvania. A state which seems permanently under construction. Continuing with Chapter 4 of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. Chapter 4, The Road Through the Forest. See, forest? When you can glance over, I will hold the book like this. There's a picture of the Munchkin painting the Scarecrow's face.
I'll have to see it later.
I know. This goes on for miles and miles, doesn't it?
I don't know, I hope not.
After a few hours, the road began to be rough and the walking grew so difficult that the Scarecrow often stumbled over the yellow brick, which was here very uneven. Sometimes, indeed, they were broken or missing altogether, leaving holes that Toto jumped across and Dorothy walked around. As for the Scarecrow, having no brains, he walked straight ahead and so stepped into the holes and fell at full length on the hard bricks. It never hurt him, however, and Dorothy would pick him up and set him upon his feet again while he joined her in laughing merrily at his own mishap. The farms were not so nearly well cared for here as they were further back. There were fewer houses and fewer trees, and the further they went, the more dismal and lonesome the country became. At noon, they sat down by the roadside near a little brook, and Dorothy opened her basket and got out some bread. She offered a piece to the Scarecrow, but he refused. "I am never hungry," he said, "and it is a lucky thing I am not, for my mouth is only painted, and if I should cut a hole in it so I could eat, the straw I am stuffed with would come out, and that would spoil the shape of my head." Dorothy saw at once that this was true, so she only nodded and went on eating her bread. "Tell me something about yourself and the country you came from," said the Scarecrow when she had finished her dinner. So she told him all about Kansas and how gray everything was there and how the cyclone carried her to this queer land of Oz. The Scarecrow listened carefully and said, "I cannot understand why you would wish to leave this beautiful country and go back to the dry, gray place you call Kansas." "That is because you have no brains," answered the girl. No matter how dreary and gray our homes are, we people of flesh and blood would rather live there than in any other country, be it ever so beautiful. There is no place like home. The Scarecrow sighed. Of course, I cannot understand it, he said. If your heads were stuffed with straw like mine, you would probably all live in the beautiful places, and then Kansas would have no people at all. It is fortunate for Kansas that you have brains. Won't you tell me a story while we are resting? Asked the child. The Scarecrow looked at her reproachfully and answered, My life has been so short that I really know nothing whatever. I was only made day before yesterday. What happened in the world before that time is all unknown to me. Luckily, when the farmer made my head, one of the first things he did was to paint my ears so that I heard what was going on. There was another munchkin with him, and the first thing I heard was the farmer saying, How do you like those ears? They aren't straight, answered the other. Never mind, said the farmer, they are ears just the same, which was true enough. Now I'll make the eyes, said the farmer. So I painted my right eye, and as soon as it was finished, I found myself looking at him and at everything around me with a great deal of curiosity, for this was my first glimpse of the world. That's a rather pretty eye, remarked the munchkin who was watching the farmer. Blue paint is just the color for eyes. I think I'll make the other a little bigger, said the farmer, and when the second eye was done, I could see much better than before. Then he made my nose and my mouth, but I did not speak because at the time I didn't know what a mouth was for. I had the fun of watching them make my body and my arms and my legs, and when they fastened on my head at last, I felt very proud, for I thought I was just as good a man as anyone. This fellow will scare the crows fast enough, said the farmer. He looks just like a man. Why, he is a man, said the other, and I quite agreed with him. The farmer carried me under his arm to the cornfield and set me up on a tall stick where you found me. He and his friend soon walked away and left me alone. I did not like to be deserted this way, so I tried to walk after them, but my feet would not touch the ground, and I was forced to stay on that pole. It was a lonely life to lead, for I had nothing to think of, having been made such a little while before. Many crows and other birds flew into the cornfield, but as soon as they saw me, they flew away again, thinking I was a munchkin, and this pleased me and made me feel that I was quite an important person. By and by, an old crow flew near me, and after looking at me carefully, he perched upon my shoulder and said, I wonder if that farmer thought to fool me in this clumsy manner. Any crow of sense will see that you are only stuffed with straw. Then he hopped down at my feet and ate all the corn he wanted. The other birds, seeing he was not harmed by me, came to eat the corn too, so that in a short time there was a great flock all around me. That's Scarecrow. Crow. I felt very sad at this, for it showed that I was not such a good Scarecrow after all, but the old crow comforted me, saying, If you only had brains in your head, you would be as good a man as any of them, and a better man than some of them. Brains are the only things worth having in this world, no matter whether one is a crow or a man. After the crows had gone, I thought this over and decided I would try hard to get some brains. By good luck, you came along and pulled me off the stake, and from what you say, I am sure the Great Oz will give me brains as soon as we get to the Emerald City. I hope so, said Dorothy earnestly, since you seem anxious to have them. Oh, yes, I am anxious, returned the Scarecrow. It is such an uncomfortable feeling to know one is a fool. That's the end of chapter 4.
Samuel X with Commander Q.
36 Jesuif Commander Q.
36 X with Commander Q. Train.
And spirit and all right.
Thank you. body or whole. March up to that gate and bid it open.
Voice Journal, Volume 20, August 11th, 1999, at 7.05 p.m. How about that?
Yes. Thank you. And those little chocolate things, too?
What chocolate thing?
The tacos.
I don't know. Driving along the I-80 East in Pennsylvania, near Clintonville, Pennsylvania. Which is exit 4.
Thank you.
Continuing reading of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. Chapter 5. Okay, so the Scarecrow is talking to... Oh, I didn't finish that chapter. There's another page. Okay. We're still in Chapter 4, which is called The Road Through the Forest. Dorothy was saying, I hope the wizard will give you brains since you seem so anxious to have them. Oh yes, I am anxious, returned the Scarecrow. It is such an uncomfortable feeling to know one is a fool. Well, said the girl, let us go. And she handed the basket to the Scarecrow. There were no fences at all by the roadside now, and the land was rough and untilled. Toward evening, they came to a great forest where trees grew so big and close together that their branches met over the road of yellow brick. It was almost dark under the trees, for the branches shut out the daylight, but the travelers did not stop and went on into the forest. If this road goes in, it must come out, said the Scarecrow, and as the Emerald City is at the other end of the road, we must go wherever it leads us. Anyone would know that, said Dorothy. Certainly, that is why I know it, returned the Scarecrow. If it required brains to figure it out, I never should have said it. After an hour or so, the light faded away, and they found themselves stumbling along in the darkness. Dorothy could not see at all, but Toto could, for some dogs can see very well in the dark, and the Scarecrow declared he could see as well by day as by night. By night as by day. So she took hold of his arm and managed to get along fairly well. If you see any house or any place where we can pass the night, she said, you must tell me, for it is very uncomfortable walking in the dark. Soon after, the Scarecrow stopped. I see a cottage at the right of us, he said, built of logs and branches. Shall we go there? Yes, indeed, said the child. I am all tired out. So the Scarecrow led her through the trees until they reached the cottage, and Dorothy entered and found a bed of dried leaves in one corner. She lay down at once, and with Toto beside her, soon fell into a sound sleep. The Scarecrow, who was never tired, stood up in another corner and waited patiently until morning came. So, glance over, you'll see the cottage in the forest. Chapter 5, The Rescue of the Tin Woodman. And there's him marching with Toto. When Dorothy awoke, the sun was shining through the trees, and Toto had long been out chasing birds and squirrels. She sat up and looked around her. There was the Scarecrow still standing patiently in his corner waiting for her. We must go and search for water, she said to him. Why do you want water, he asked. to wash my face clean after the dust of the road, and to drink, and so the dry bread will not stick in my throat. It must be inconvenient to be made of flesh, said the Scarecrow thoughtfully, for you must sleep and eat and drink. However, you have brains, and it is worth a lot of bother to be able to think properly. They left the cottage and walked through the trees until they found a little spring of clear water, where Dorothy drank and bathed and ate her breakfast. And the girl was thankful the Scarecrow did not have to eat anything, for there was scarcely enough for herself and Toto for the day. When she finished her meal and was about to go back to the road of yellow brick, she was startled to hear a deep groan nearby. "What was that?" she asked timidly. "I cannot imagine," replied the Scarecrow, "but we can go and see." Just then another groan reached their ears, and the sound seemed to come from behind them. They turned and walked through the forest a few steps when Dorothy discovered something shining in a ray of sunshine that fell between the trees. She ran to the place and then stopped short with a cry of surprise. One of the big trees had been partly chopped through, and standing beside it with an uplifted axe in his hands was a man made entirely of tin. His head and arms and legs were jointed upon his body, but he stood perfectly motionless as if he could not stir at all. Dorothy looked at him in amazement, and so did the Scarecrow, while Toto barked sharply and made a snap at the tin legs, which hurt his teeth. "Did you groan?" asked Dorothy. "Yes," answered the tin man, "I did. I've been groaning for more than a year, and no one has ever heard me before or come to help me." "What can I do for you?" she inquired softly, for she was moved by the sad voice in which the man spoke. "Get an oil can and oil my joints," he answered. "They are rusted so badly that I cannot move them at all. If I am well oiled, I shall be all right again. You will find an oil can on a shelf in my cottage." Dorothy at once ran back to the cottage and found the oil can, and then she returned and asked anxiously, "Where are your joints?" "Oil my neck first," replied the Tin Woodman. So she oiled it, and as it was quite badly rusted, the Scarecrow took hold of the tin head and moved it gently from side to side until it worked freely, and then the man could turn it himself. "Now oil the joints in my arms," he said. And as Dorothy oiled them and the Scarecrow bent them carefully until they were quite free from rust and as good as new. The Tin Woodman gave a sigh of satisfaction and lowered his axe, which he leaned against the tree. "This is a great comfort," he said. "I have been holding that axe in the air ever since I rusted, and I am glad to be able to put it down at last. Now, if you will oil the joints of my legs, I shall be all right once more." Oh, here's a... Let's see. The color plate on the left-hand side of this book will be Dorothy sitting with the Scarecrow while he told his story of being made. And the plate on the right-hand side is Dorothy and the Scarecrow rescuing the Tin Woodman. Sort of like color plates, but I think they're what's known as four color plates.
Four colors should be all like every color.
Oh, well, no, they're not.
Two color or three color.
Maybe they're three color plates. Blue, green, yellow. I don't know.
Well, green would be That would be two colors so far, blue and yellow.
Blue and yellow. Brown.
So the third color. They're blue, yellow, whatever's making them brown.
Oh well. You get the point. We're going to get to one of my favorite tractors soon. That is nowhere, no how, and not even close to being in the movie. Okay. So they were oiling Lieutenant Woodman. And... what? It's a lovely Jersey barrier. Why did they do this? Is this construction again?
No.
This is just the way it is.
Yeah.
They have a beautiful river in their state, but you can't possibly see it because of the Jersey barrier.
Well, but if you had an SUV.
But, I mean, the average car rolling along can't see it.
Oh, way down to each
other?
Yeah.
Oh, well. Okay, I'm going to continue now. So they oiled his legs until he could move them freely, and he thanked them again and again for his release, for he seemed a very polite creature and very grateful. I might have stood there always if you had not come along, he said, so you have certainly saved my life. How did you happen to be here? We are on our way to the Emerald City to see the Great Oz, she answered, and we stopped at your cottage to pass the night. Why do you wish to see Oz, he asked. I want to see him. I want him to send me back to Kansas, and the Scarecrow wants him to put a few brains into his head, she replied. The Tin Woodman appeared to think deeply for a moment. Then he said, do you suppose Oz could give me a heart? Why, I guess so, Dorothy answered. It would be as easy as to give the Scarecrow brains. Then the Tin Woodman returned. True, said the Tin Woodman. So, if you will allow me to join your party, I will also go to the Emerald City and ask Oz to help me. Come along, said the Scarecrow heartily, and Dorothy added that she would be pleased to have his company. So the Tin Woodman shouldered his axe, and they all passed through the forest until they came to the road that was paved with yellow brick. The Tin Woodman had asked Dorothy to put the oil can in her basket, for, he said, if I should get caught in the rain and rust again, I shall need the oil can badly. It was a bit of good luck to have their new comrade join the party, for soon after they had begun their journey again, they came to a place where the trees and branches grew so thick over the road that the travelers could not pass. But the Tin Woodman set to work with his axe and chopped so well that he soon cleared a passage for the entire party. Dorothy was thinking so earnestly as they walked along that she did not notice when the Scarecrow stumbled into a hole and rolled over to the side of the road. Indeed, he was obliged to call to her to help him up again. Why didn't you walk around the hole? Asked the Tin Woodman. I don't know enough, replied the Scarecrow cheerfully. My head is stuffed with straw, you know, and that is why I'm going to Oz to ask him for some brains. Oh, I see, said the Tin Woodman, but after all, brains are not the best things in the world. Have you any, inquired the Scarecrow? No, my head is quite empty, answered the Woodman, but I once had brains and a heart also, so having tried them both, I should much rather have a heart. Here's the Scarecrow stumbled in a hole, and Toto looking at him. Like, he's just the biggest dope in the world. And why is that? Asked the Scarecrow. I will tell you my story, and then you will know. So while they walked through the forest, the Tin Woodman told the following story. I was born the son of a woodman who chopped down trees in the forest and sold the wood for a living. When I grew up, I too became a woodchopper, and after my father died, I took care of my old mother as long as she lived. Then I made up my mind that instead of living alone, I would marry so that I might not become lonely. See? That's all you have to do. You make up your mind that you're going to marry so that you don't become lonely.
Simple.
Simple.
Elephant soup. Step one. First, catch your elephant.
There was one of the Munchkin girls who was so beautiful that I soon grew to love her with all my heart. She, on her part, promised to marry me as soon as I could earn enough money to build a better house for her. So I set to work harder than ever. But the girl lived with an old woman who did not want her to marry anyone,
for she was so lazy she wished the girl would remain with her and do the cooking and the housework. So the old woman went to the wicked witch of the East and promised her 2 sheep and a cow if she would prevent the marriage. Thereupon the wicked witch enchanted my axe, and when I was chopping away at my best one day, for I was anxious to get the new house and my wife as soon as possible, the axe slipped all at once and cut off my left leg. Yep. The movie never tells you how he became a Tin Woodman.
No.
This at first seemed a great misfortune, for I knew a one-legged man could not do very well as a woodchopper. So I went to the tinsmith and had him make me a new leg of tin. The leg worked very well once I was used to it, but my action angered the wicked witch of the East, for she had promised the old woman I should not marry the pretty munchkin girl. When I began chopping again, my axe slipped and cut off my right leg. Again I went to the tinner, and again he made me a leg of tin. After this, the enchanted axe cut off my arms, one after the other, but nothing daunted, I had them replaced with tin ones. The wicked witch then made the axe slip and cut off my head, and at first I thought that was the end of me, but the tinner happened to come along and he made me a new head of tin. See, it's as simple as that. Chop your head off, the tinner makes you a new head.
There are no tinners anymore, so.
Oh.
Now if you chop your head off, you're screwed.
Yeah. I thought I had beaten the wicked witch then, and I worked harder than ever, but I little knew how cruel my enemy could be. She thought of a new way to kill my love for the beautiful munchkin maiden, and made my axe slip again so that it cut right through my body, splitting me into 2 halves.
No.
Once more the tinner came to my help and made me a body of tin, fastening my tin arms and legs and head to it by means of joints, so that I could move around as well as ever. But alas, I now had no heart, so I lost all my love for the munchkin girl, and did not care whether I married her or not. I suppose she's still living with the old woman, waiting for me to come after her. My body shone so brightly in the sun that I felt very proud of it, and it did not matter now if my axe slipped, for it could not cut me. There was only one danger, that my joints would rust, but I kept an oil can in my cottage and took care to oil myself whenever I needed it. However, there came a day when I forgot to do this, and being caught in a rainstorm before I thought of the danger, my joints had rusted, and I was left to stand in the woods until you came to help me. It is a terrible thing to undergo, but during the year I stood there, I had time to think that the greatest loss I had known was the loss of my heart. While I was in love, I was the happiest man on earth. But no one can love who has not a heart, and so I'm resolved to ask Oz to give me one. If he does, I will go back to the Munchkin Maiden and marry her. Simple as that. On the left-hand side of this page is the Tin Woodman oiling himself, and on the right-hand side is the Tin Woman gleaming in the sun. Both Dorothy and the Scarecrow had been greatly interested in the story of the Tin Woodman, and now knew why he was so anxious to have a heart, get a new heart. All the same, said the Scarecrow, I shall ask for brains instead of a heart, for a fool would not know what to do with a heart if he had one. I shall take the heart, returned the Tin Woodman, for brains do not make one happy, and happiness is the best thing in the world. Dorothy did not say anything, for she was puzzled to know which of her 2 friends was right, and she decided if she could only get back to Kansas and Aunt Em, it did not matter so much whether the Woodman had no brains and the Scarecrow had no heart, or each got what he wanted. What worried her most was the bread was nearly gone, and another meal for herself and Toto would empty the basket. To be sure, neither the Woodman nor the Scarecrow ever ate anything, but she was not made of tin nor straw and could not live unless she was fed. Oh, that's the end of that chapter. Want to hear more? Chapter 6, The Cowardly Lion. Here's the first picture of him. Yeah.
Did we get to your favorite chapter yet?
Oh, no, but that's coming soon. That's coming soon. Let's see. We're about to start Chapter 6. And... I'm not really sure. He'll use one of the next couple of chapters, probably. Let's see if we can... Let's see, did I miss out on a color plate? Color plate. Like this picture. It's a picture of the lion sitting most regally and Dorothy and Toto sort of snuggled against him, looking very small and cute.
Cute.
Oh, that would be my watch, wouldn't it?
Yes, it thinks it's some even numbered time or something.
It wishes to help. Apparently it's set for 7:25 p.m.
Excellent.
Does it beep for a whole minute? No, it beeps for 30 seconds. Okay. All this time, Dorothy and her companions had been walking through the thick woods. The road was still paved with yellow brick, but these were much covered by dead branches and dried branches and dead leaves from the trees, and the walking was not at all good. There were few birds in this part of the forest, for birds love the open country where there is plenty of sunshine, but now and then came a deep growl from some wild animal hidden among the trees. These sounds made the little girl's heart beat fast, for she did not know what made them, but Toto knew, and he walked close to Dorothy's side and did not even bark in return. "How long will it be," the child asked of the Tin Woodman, "before we are out of the forest?" "I cannot tell," was the answer, "for I have never been to the Emerald City. But my father went there once when I was a boy, and he said it was a long journey through a dangerous country, although nearer to the city where Oz dwells, the country is quite beautiful. But I am not afraid so long as I have my oil can, and nothing can hurt the Scarecrow, while you bear upon your forehead the mark of the Good Witch's kiss, and that will protect you from harm." "But Toto," said the girl anxiously, "what will protect him?" "We must protect him ourselves if he is in danger," replied the Tin Woodman. Just as he spoke, there came from the forest a terrible roar, and the next moment a great lion bounded into the road. With one blow of his paw, he sent the Scarecrow spinning. It's the second one I've noticed. The other was a space error. There was a comma, and then there was no space before the next word. Spining over and over to the edge of the road, and then he struck at the Tin Woodman with his sharp claws, but to the lion's surprise he made no impression on the tin, although the woodman fell over in the road and lay still. Little Toto, now that he had an enemy to face, ran barking toward the lion, and the great beast opened his mouth to bite the dog, when Dorothy, fearing Toto would be killed and heedless of danger... Wow. Oh. Giant mechanical strawberries.
Yes, kind of.
What next? When Dorothy, fearing Toto would be killed and heedless of danger, rushed forward and slapped the lion upon his nose as hard as she could, while she cried out, "Don't you dare bite Toto. You ought to be ashamed of yourself, a big beast like you, to bite a poor little dog." "I didn't bite him," said the lion as he rubbed his nose with his paw where Dorothy had hit it. "No, but you tried to," she retorted. "You are nothing but a big coward." "I know it," said the lion, hanging his head in shame. "I've always known it, but how can I help it?" "I don't know, I'm sure. To think of your striking a poor stuffed man like the Scarecrow." Let's see, I better get you the color plate before you pass the scene. Now, if you look on the left-hand plate, I'm going to cover the right-hand one because it's really cool. Let's see. The damage the lion caused and the result thereafter. Yeah, alright. "Is he stuffed?" asked the lion in surprise as he watched her pick up the Scarecrow and set him upon his feet while she patted him back into shape again. "Of course he's stuffed," replied Dorothy, who was still angry. "That's why he went over so easily," remarked the lion. "It astonished me to see him whirl around so. Is the other one stuffed also?" "No," said Dorothy. "He's made of tin." And she helped the woodman up again. That's why he nearly blunted my claws, said the lion. When they scratched against the tin, it made a cold shiver run down my back.
What is the little, what is that little animal you are so tender of?
Another beautiful room we can't see. Almost saw many beautiful rivers in Pennsylvania. He is my dog, Toto, answered Dorothy. Is he made of tin or stuffed? Asked the lion. Neither. He's a meat dog, said the girl. Oh, he's a curious animal and seems remarkably small now that I look at him. No one would think of biting such a little thing except a coward like me, continued the lion sadly. What makes you a coward? Asked Dorothy.
Kind of sunset.
Ah. What makes you a coward? Asked Dorothy, looking at the great beast in wonder, for he was big as a small horse. It's a mystery, replied the lion. I suppose I was born that way. All the other animals in the forest naturally expect me to be brave, for the lion is everywhere thought to be the king of the beasts. I learned that if I roared very loudly, every living thing was frightened and got out of my way. Whenever I've met a man, I've been awfully scared, but I just roared at him, and he would always run away as fast as he could go. If the elephants and the tigers and the bears had ever tried to fight me, I should have run myself. I'm such a coward. But just as soon as they hear me roar, they all try to get away from me, and of course I let them go. But that isn't right. The king of beasts shouldn't be a coward, said the scarecrow. I know it, replied the lion, wiping a tear from his eye with the tip of his tail. Here's the weeping lion. It is my great sorrow and makes my life very unhappy. But whenever there is danger, my heart begins to beat fast. Perhaps you have heart disease, the Tin Woodman. It may be, said the lion. If you have, continued the Tin Woodman, you ought to be glad, for it proves you have a heart. For my part, I have no heart, so I cannot have heart disease. Perhaps, said the lion thoughtfully, if I had no heart, I should not be a coward. Have you brains? Asked the scarecrow. I suppose so. I've never looked to see, replied the lion. I am going to the Great Oz to ask him to give me some, remarked the scarecrow, for my head is stuffed with straw. And I'm going to ask him to give me a... What?
Another one.
Oh, I can see a little bit of that one. And I am going to ask him to give me a heart, said the woodman. And I'm going to ask him to send Toto and me back to Kansas, added Dorothy. Do you think Oz would give me courage? Could give me courage, asked the cowardly lion. Just as easily as he could give me brains, said the scarecrow. Or give me a heart, said the Tin Woodman. Or send me back to Kansas, said Dorothy. Then if you don't mind, I'll go with you, said the lion, for my life is simply unbearable without a bit of courage. You will be very welcome, answered Dorothy, for you will help to keep away the other wild beasts. It seems to me they must be more cowardly than you are if they allow you to scare them so easily. They really are, said the lion, but that doesn't make me any braver, and as long as I know myself to be a coward, I shall be unhappy. So once more the little company set off upon the journey, the lion walking with stately strides at Dorothy's side. Toto did not approve this new comrade at first, for he could not forget how nearly he had been crushed between the lion's great jaws. But after a time he became more at ease, and presently Toto and the cowardly lion had grown to be good friends. During the rest of that day there were no other adventures to mar the peace of their journey. Once, indeed, the Tin Woodman stepped upon a beetle that was crawling along the road and killed the poor little thing. This made the Tin Woodman very unhappy, for he was always very careful not to hurt any living creature, and as he walked along, he wept several tears of sorrow and regret. These tears ran slowly down his face and over the hinges of his jaw, and there they rusted. When Dorothy presently asked him a question, the Tin Woodman could not open his mouth, for his jaws were tightly rusted together. He became greatly frightened at this and made many motions to Dorothy to relieve him, but she could not understand. The lion was also puzzled to know what was wrong. But the scarecrow seized the oil can from Dorothy's basket and oiled the woodman's jaws so that after a few moments he could talk as well as before. This will serve me a lesson, said he. to look where I step. For if I should kill another bug or beetle, I should surely cry again, and crying rusts my jaw so that I cannot speak. Thereafter, he walked very carefully with his eyes on the road, and when he saw a tiny ant toiling by, he would step over it so as to not harm it. The Tin Woodman knew very well he had no heart, and therefore he took great care never to be cruel or unkind to anything. You people with hearts, he said, have something to guide you and need never do wrong. But I have no heart, and so I must be very careful. When Oz gives me a heart, of course, I needn't mind so much. There's a twisted but consistent logic to the way that people think in this story about things. It's very strange. Chapter 7, The Journey to the Great Oz. Here's a picture of these creatures you're going to meet. These are the Kalidas. Kalidas. They're part one thing and part another thing and part a third thing. Here's the lion and Dorothy and Toto. Posed. The lion's tail is most wonderfully wrapped around the letter T in the word they. It's looking quite noble. They were obliged to camp out that night under a large tree in the forest, for there were no houses near. The tree made a good, thick covering to protect them from the dew, and the Tin Woodman chopped a great pile of wood with his axe, and Dorothy built a splendid fire that warmed her and made her feel less lonely. She and Toto ate the last of their bread, and now she did not know what they would do for breakfast. If you wish, said the lion, I will go into the forest and kill a deer for you. You can roast it by the fire, since your tastes are so peculiar that you prefer cooked food, and then you will have a very good breakfast. Don't, please don't, begged the Tin Woodman. I should certainly weep if you killed a poor deer, and then my jaws would rust again. But the lion went away into the forest and found his own supper, and no one ever knew what it was, for he didn't mention it. I love little details like that. And the scarecrow found a tree full of nuts and filled Dorothy's basket with them so that she would not be hungry for a long time. She thought that this was very kind and thoughtful of the scarecrow, but she laughed heartily at the awkward way in which the poor creature picked up the nuts. His padded hands were so clumsy and the nuts were so small that he dropped almost as many as he put in the basket. But the scarecrow did not mind how long it took him to fill the basket, for it enabled him to keep away from the fire, as he feared a spark might get into his straw and burn him up. So he kept a good distance away from the flames, and only came near to cover Dorothy with dry leaves when she lay down to sleep. This kept her very snug and warm, and she slept soundly until morning. And there's the scarecrow picking up nuts with his padded hands.
Okay.
When, what number are we at?
67.
Okay.
You want to switch? You want to switch turns?
Yeah. I'd be glad to.
Well,
but they don't have to know that.
Well,
I think that,
daylight, the girl bathed her face in a little rippling brook, and soon after they all started toward the Emerald City. This was to be a very eventful day for the travelers. They had hardly been walking an hour when they saw before them a great ditch that crossed the road and divided the forest as far as they could see on either side. It was a very wide ditch, and when they crept up to the edge and looked into it, they could see it was also very deep, and there were many big jagged rocks at the bottom. The sides were so steep that none could climb down them, and for a moment it seemed that their journey must end. "What shall we do?" asked Dorothy despairingly. "I haven't the faintest idea," said the Tin Woodman, and the Lion shook his head, his shaggy mane, and looked thoughtful. But the Scarecrow said, "We cannot fly, that is certain. Neither can we climb down into this ditch."
Wait, I'm sorry, where was the ditch?
It's across the road. If it came to the point in the road, there's a ditch. And on the other side, the road continues. But it's a deep, deep ditch. Compared to the Yellow Brick Road, 80 is not bad. 80, the Yellow Brick Road has lots and lots of problems. It gets worse. Scarecrow said, "We cannot fly, that is certain. Neither can we climb down into this great ditch. Therefore, if we cannot jump over it, we must stop where we are." "I think I could jump over it," said the Cowardly Lion, after measuring the distance carefully in his mind. "Then we are all right," answered the Scarecrow, "for you can carry us all over on your back, one at a time." "Well, I'll try it," said the Lion. "Who will go first?" "I will," declared the Scarecrow, "for if you found that you could not jump over the gulf, Dorothy would be killed, or the Tin Woodman badly dented on the rocks below. But if I am on your back, it will not matter so much, for the fall would not hurt me at all." "I am terribly afraid of falling myself," said the Cowardly Lion, "but I suppose there is nothing to do but try it. So get on my back and we will make the attempt." I think it's time to. It might be time for you too. It's pretty dark with those on. There isn't that much better? We don't even need this now. All right. "I am terribly afraid of falling myself." You want those cleaned?
Yeah.
Are those prescription sunglasses, by the way?
Yeah.
That must be a neat thing to have.
Yeah.
There you go. "I am terribly afraid of falling myself," said the Cowardly Lion, "but I suppose there is nothing to do but try it. So get on my back and we will make the attempt." The Scarecrow sat upon the lion's back and the big beast walked to the edge of the gulf and crouched down. "Why don't you run and jump?" asked the Scarecrow. "Because that isn't the way we lions do these things," he replied. Then giving a great spring, he shot through the air and landed safely on the other side. They were all greatly pleased to see how easily he did it, and after the Scarecrow had got down from his back, the Lion sprang across the ditch again. Dorothy thought she would go next, so she took Toto in her arms and climbed on the Lion's back. holding tightly to his mane with one hand. The next moment it seemed as if she was flying through the air, and then before she had time to think about it, she was safely on the other side. There's the lion. Dorothy. The lion went back a third time and got the Tin Woodman, and they all sat down for a few minutes to give the beast a chance to rest, for his great leaps had made his breath short, and he panted like a big dog that has been running too long. They found the forest very thick on this side, and it looked dark and gloomy. After the lion had rested, they started along the road of yellow brick, silently wondering, each in his own mind, if ever they would come to the end of the woods and reach the bright sunshine again. To add to their discomfort, they soon heard strange noises in the depths of the forest, and the lion whispered to them that it was in this part of the country that the Kalidahs lived. "What are the Kalidahs?" asked the girl. "They are monstrous beasts with bodies like bears and heads like tigers," replied the lion, "and with claws so long and sharp that they could tear me in two as easily as I could kill Toto. I'm terribly afraid of the Kalidahs." "I'm not surprised that you are," returned Dorothy. Missing period. "They must be dreadful beasts." The lion was about to reply when suddenly they came to another gulf across the road, but this one was so broad and deep that the lion knew at once he could not leap across it. So they sat down to consider what they should do. And after serious thought, the scarecrow said, "Here is a great tree standing close to the ditch. If the Tin Woodman can chop it down so that it will fall to the other side, we could walk across it easily." "That is a first-rate idea," said the lion. "One would almost suspect that you had brains in your head instead of straw." The woodman set to work at once, and so sharp was his axe that the tree was soon chopped nearly through. Then the lion put his strong front legs against the tree and pushed with all his might, and soon the big tree tipped and fell with a crash across the ditch, with its top branches on the other side. They had just started to cross this queer bridge when a sharp growl made them all look up, and to their horror, they saw running toward them two great beasts with bodies like bears and heads like tigers. "They are the Kalidahs," said the lion, beginning to tremble. "Quick," cried the scarecrow, "let us cross over." So Dorothy went first, holding Toto in her arms. The Tin Woodman followed, and the scarecrow came next. The lion, although he was certainly afraid, turned to face the Kalidahs, and then he gave so loud and terrible a roar that Dorothy screamed and the scarecrow fell over backwards, while even the fierce beast stopped short and looked at him in surprise. But seeing they were bigger than the lion, and remembering there were two of them and only one of him, the Kalidahs again rushed forward, and the lion crossed over the tree and turned to see what they would do next. Without stopping an instant, the fierce beast also began to cross the tree, and the lion said to Dorothy, "We are lost, for they will surely tear us to pieces with their sharp claws. But stand close behind me, and I will fight them as long as I am alive." "Wait a minute," called the scarecrow. He had been thinking what best to be done, and now he asked the woman to chop away the end of the tree that rested on their side of the ditch. The Tin Woodman began to use his axe at once, and just as the two Kalidahs were nearly across, the tree fell with a crash into the gulf, carrying the ugly, snarling brutes with it, and both were dashed to pieces on the sharp rocks at the bottom. There's a most excellent picture of that happening.
Cool.
Yes. I've always liked this picture. I always liked that passage. Not sure why, but neat. "Well," said the cowardly lion, drawing a little breath of relief, "I see we're going to live a little while longer, and I am glad of it, for it must be a very uncomfortable thing not to be alive." There's Dorothy looking cute as ever on the lion's back. I guess the Tin Woodman will be later chopping another tree. "Those creatures frightened me so badly that my heart is beating yet." "Ah," said the Tin Woodman sadly, "I wish I had a heart to beat." This adventure made the travelers more anxious than ever to get out of the forest, and they walked so fast that Dorothy became tired and had to ride on the lion's back. And she's riding side saddle.
Lovely. I can barely see straight. I can't look at the pictures.
Why can't you see straight?
I'm really tired.
We're going to get off 78?
Yeah.
Ah, see? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To their great joy, the trees became thinner the further they advanced, and in the afternoon they suddenly came upon a broad river flowing swiftly before them. On the other side, they could see the road of yellow brick running through a beautiful country with green meadows dotted with bright flowers and all the road bordered with trees hanging full of delicious fruits. They were greatly pleased to see this delightful country before them. "How shall we cross the river?" asked Dorothy. "That is easily done," replied the Scarecrow. "The Tin Woodman must build us a raft so we can float to the other side." So the woodman took his axe and began to chop down small trees to make a raft, and while he was busy at this, the Scarecrow found on the river a tree full of fine fruit. This pleased Dorothy, who had eaten nothing but nuts all day, and she made a hearty meal of the ripe fruit. But it takes time to make a raft, even when one is as industrious and untiring as the Tin Woodman, and when night came, the work was not done. So they found a cozy place under the trees where they slept well until the morning, and Dorothy dreamed of the Emerald City and of the good Wizard Oz, who would soon send her back to her own home again. End of chapter 7. Soon you will not be driving. Or wow. Okay. p.m. September 11th, 1999, driving along I-80 east in Pennsylvania, nearing exit 20, which is the exit for Woodland, Pennsylvania. I drove 20 miles in these curvy nighttime mountains tonight, and it felt like 150 on normal roads in the daytime. But now Mina's back in front of the wheel, so all is well. And later on, we're going to listen to a little NPR. And that will be most fun. There'll be an interview with an interesting person. There'll be a roundtable discussion. There might be a candid interview.
Shut up. Oh, my fucking car.
You know? Oh, really?
Yes.
You didn't throw me out before.
Well, I'm throwing you out
now. You're throwing me out now?
Walk home. You drive me nuts.
Very
rude.
It is not rude.
It's very rude to harass the driver.
I'm keeping you riled.
You're making me really annoyed.
Oh, fooey. I'm reading you. I read you Heinlein, didn't I?
Yeah, well.
And I played tapes for you, and I fed you, and I've been your...
Yeah, well, if you could shut up, I'd
cushion.
Like that, too.
Oh, shut up, bitch.
Yeah, well, no one except Nicole
likes to be harassed. What?
No one except Nicole likes to be harassed.
I'm enjoying harassing you.
I can see that, but I'm not enjoying being harassed by you.
Oh, really? That's really too bad. Oh, look, Dorothy's asleep between giant poppies. What?
I'm not looking at your fucking
book. Oh. Excuse me, miss. You are not getting single page read on with that attitude.
Ah!
And now I've lost the book. It's down the sea. Can't get it.
Sight pair of subwoofer in the merry old land of Oz.